The Katina ceremony involves the generosity of many, many people, the offerings of many people, and the symbolic offering of all these things is the Katina robe itself. And Ambassador Pisan has the robe here, so what he'll do is he'll send it down and pass it so that everyone can touch it. This is a lovely tradition in Buddhism that the offering is shared by everyone here. So perhaps I could start now. Just this one, just this little one. Anitana. Yeah, because that's the robe that's going to be offered. Yeah. If that could get passed around, and everyone just touch it, and sharing the goodness and the merit of this day. Huh? Well, they me continue on doing it, and both sides. Choreography. So let me just perhaps explain how this ceremony will proceed. The Katina ceremony itself is one that is not initiated by the ordained Sangha. The lay people initiate the invitation. So we don't say, let's have a Katina and organize it. The lay people say, Venerable Sirs or Venerable Ayahs, we would like to invite your community to receive Katina robes cloth. And so that is done before the beginning of the Vassa, which is the full moon of July. And then during the Vassa, the community that is offering to support the Sangha in the robes supports them for the Vassa. And then at some point in the month after the full moon of October, usually after the Vassa period, a date is set and the Katina ceremony is organized around that date. And then the person or the families of people involved in that Katina ceremony try to get other people in the community, obviously all of us here, involved in that. And it becomes this lovely gift-giving Christmas kind of Buddha celebration. This ceremony can be done for monks and nuns, and I think the sisters probably could use a Katina too. So if anyone is inspired for that kind of ceremony, please think about it. Think about how you could come together, a few people, and say, Ayamitanandi, we'd like to invite you for a Katina next year. And the Katina ceremony, you can do Katina normal or you could do Katina light. Now, Katina light is called a papa in Thai. And that can happen any time of the year. So please, you know, think about it and make an intention as a group to create this kind of situation and ceremony for our sisters up in Sati Saraniya. The Katina robe itself, the idea of the Katina robe is that the cloth is offered to the Sangha, and then from that cloth, the bhikkhus go back to the vihara, to the monastery, and communally we sew the robe for one of the senior monks. And I think that's going to be Viradamo. So one of the senior monks is chosen to receive this robe, and the rest of the community helps to make it, I hope. I've already blown it. The surprise is gone. Okay. I'm not very good at this. But the spirit of it is very much one of communal generosity. We all come together, we share this beautiful meal, we support the Sangha in their efforts, and then the Sangha comes together and sews a robe as a communal activity. And the word Katina itself is, have you ever seen a quilt frame? You know, in quilting, if you're doing a quilt, you have a big frame, you pin the cloth onto the quilt frame, and then a lot of people can work on the quilting. And this Katina actually means that kind of frame for sewing. And in the time of the Buddha, they did not have sewing machines. Surprise, surprise. So they had to do it by hand. And you imagine sewing a robe the size of our robes, it takes quite a lot of time. So the bhikkhus would take the robe's cloth, stitch it, pin it together, and then work communally together on the robe, making the robe. We have machines. We have sewing machines. But what happens is each of the monks takes one part of the robe, sews it, and then passes it on to the next monk and the next monk. And then in the evening, we have a formal ceremony, Sangha Kama ceremony between ourselves, and that robe is offered to the senior monk who's been appointed by the Sangha. And the feeling is it's lovely, because it's like we've spent the Vasa together, we've been practicing together, studying Vinaya together, working quite diligently, and now we have a chance to sort of come together and have this sort of celebratory, communal gathering together. And then traditionally in Thailand, in India, what would have happened is after the rainy season, the monks would have started wandering. So the reason the catena robe was important was because the monks' robes could have very much rotted during the rain season, because you couldn't get them dry. The robes would have been used all year, and they would have really been short of robes material. So that was the ideal time. And then with the end of the catena ceremony, other monks would also have robes material, and then they would go wandering again. And that wandering tradition is a bit tough in Canadian winter. But say in Venerable Suvijano's monastery, he's from the south of Thailand, and I think he has about, maybe there are about 80 bhikkhus or something, 50 bhikkhus, 70 bhikkhus. 70 bhikkhus and 120 nuns in his monastery. And at the end of the rains retreat, there's the katina ceremony, and his teacher encourages the monks to go wandering. So then, and he says to them, if you're going to go wandering, you shouldn't sleep in a shelter. You should sleep out in the open. And it's possible in Thailand. It's a bit tough here in January, February.
And
all the months. So it's either mosquitoes or snow that gets you here. But so Venerable Suvijana, in his early years of monasticism, he would do that every year. They'd have the Vasa. They'd spend the Vasa together doing formal practice and study. And then he would go off to Chiang Mai, maybe three monks. And they would wander for 3 or 4 months, village to village, sleeping out in the open, very much dependent on where they can find water, where they can find shelter, where they can find food. So it's a very, it's an ascetic practice, which the Buddha encouraged us to do. And so we don't do that, but a lot of these ideas and the flavor of these ideas come to us from the time of the Buddha, and we can enact some of them and some we can't. So this year, I won't be doing Tudong outside. In fact, I've got a really nice new building. You might have heard that we have a Bhikkhu Vihara. And I wanted to take this opportunity to thank you all for supporting us, because that Bhikkhu Vihara is very timely. Just as the Katina comes, we have a new Vihara that we can move into. So it's very, very timely for us. But I'm not going to be very ascetic this winter, but I will enjoy my shower. Be very comfortable. So I think we have the robe is almost, has it been passed around?
In the process.
So as the robe is being passed around, I also wanted to take this opportunity to thank the many people who helped to actually build this structure. So I'd like to introduce you to Eddie Edmondson. Eddie, could you please come up? There he is. Eddie is our architect, and he's designed and executed a very beautiful building, and we wanted to make an offering to him of appreciation and gratitude. Come on up here, Eddie. And so we had something for you, and Ambassador Pisan would like to make the presentation to you. Eddie's a great friend, a very good architect, and he's done a wonderful job, and I am extremely, extremely grateful for your work, Eddie. So here's a little token of our appreciation. And then you had a few words to say.
I hope it's turned off. Like Ajahn, I need to have a few notes for reference. I never envisaged, when I started my journey as an architect back in England, that there would be two things that have had a great impact on me. The first one was having the insight for myself and my family to come and live in this great country of Canada, a country of our choice. And secondly, having had the opportunity to work with Ajahn on the new monks building and also the new, hopefully soon, meditation hall. I've been working with John now for about 2 years on this project, and there's always been some frustrations, but working with John has been, you know, a wonderful and rewarding experience, and I'm grateful to John for that. There are always some frustrations, but John kept me on the, what I know as the straight and narrow. At times we'd say, Eddie, don't get stressed, you know, go home to your family, don't worry about it. If it takes an extra day, so be it. I was happy also to be able to recommend to the monastery for Mark Tritton, who's the contractor, to execute the construction of this contract. And I have to say that Mark has done, in my opinion, an excellent job, and he's gone the extra mile. Thank you, Mark. I know that he also has had to endure some frustrations, but I'll not go into the detail on those. And I trust, John, that you and all of the monks will enjoy the new building for a long time to come. Finally, with John and the other monks, we have developed a concept for the new meditation hall, which you see at front, which is primarily an objective for fundraising, but also we hope we're going to get into construction next year. By the way, nobody's allowed to leave the room until we've raised the money. Just a hint, if you look at the interior perspective, you will find two individuals on there who are currently in this room, and I'll leave you to see who they are. Anyway, thank you once again, my friends. Thank you.
Thank you, Eddie. And now I'd like to introduce Mark Tritton. Please, Mark, come on up. Mark is the man who took up the challenge of Eddie's drawings and executed his building really beautifully. He's a good craftsman himself, and he brought into the project the finest craftsman in Perth, really. And he really did a lot. And so it wasn't just a job for him. It's a work of love. So, Mark, we're very, very grateful to you. Thanks for all your beautiful work.
To see if this is working. It appears to be. Like Eddie, I'd just like to reiterate our appreciation for having been involved in the project. It was certainly a wonderful opportunity for us, and similarly a wonderful opportunity to get to know the Tisserana community here in Perth and work with the monks on realizing this very important building. We hope that you enjoy the building and the community at large gets to enjoy the next phase of the project as it comes to fruition. And I would like to take this opportunity to thank Eddie for his work in designing it and inviting me to be a part of it. Ajahn and his community for putting up with us for these months, and hopefully you will enjoy the fruits of our labor. I'd also like to take this opportunity to thank our suppliers and tradespeople and my carpenters, one of whom is here. Peter, where are you? You're over here. Thank Peter for his efforts as well. And with any luck, this building brings you much happiness in the years to come. Thank you very much.
We could begin the formal ceremony, so Venerable Chunda and Venerable Attila, if you could make your way to the platform. The ceremony involves Venerable Attila and Venerable Chunda will formally receive the cloth, and they'll do a formal recitation. Ambassador Pisan will now do a phrase-by-phrase recitation, which I would ask you to join him. So he'll do a Pali phrase, and then you repeat after him, another Pali phrase, repeat after him, and we'll do the same in English too. And I think some of that is on the sheet, but Ambassador Pisan will lead.
Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Sambuddhassa. Namo Tassa Bhagavato.
That is the offering we do in Anjali, correct?
Sambuddhassa. Namo Tassa Bhagavato. Arahato Samma Sambuddhassa. Imang Pante. Sapparivarang. Katina Jiva Ratusang. Piku Sankhasa. Ono Chayama. Satuno Pante. Piku Sankho. Imang. Sapparivarang. Katina Jiva. Ratusang. Patikanhatu. Patika hetava. Ja. Imina. Tusena. Katinang. Ataratu. Amhakanjeva. Mata pitu ati. Natchayatakanang. Tikaratang. Hitaya. Sukhaya. We have all gathered here today to offer Katina robe cloth and other requisites to the Sangha.
We request
that the Sangha
receive these offerings
of Katina robe,
cloth,
and requisites
for our long-lasting benefit
and happiness.
We wish to dedicate
the well-being
coming from our offerings
to our relatives and friends,
particularly
our parents.
Kumbhanchana, May, Ambassador, come together with on the cloth. All three of you together. Yeah.
Venerable Chunden, Venerable Atila will then do the Sangha announcement.
Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa.
This Katina cloth and all of the offerings present here are the dana of Ambassador Pisan and Kunwanchana Manawapat and all of the faithful and generous lay people who have gathered together for this occasion. These offerings are being made to the Sangha, which has spent the 3 months rains retreat in this monastery. This Katina cloth has come in a pure and unsolicited way, as if it had been wafted here on a breeze and settled in the midst of this assembly without favoring anyone in particular. However, the Lord Buddha has made a provision whereby the Sangha can agree to choose which among them they would like to receive the cloth. This person must be one who knows the rules and observances concerning the Katina ceremony according to the terms laid down by the Lord Buddha, and must be one who can recite the aims and purposes of the Lord Buddha's teachings. They should be pure in moral conduct and have the mindfulness and wisdom to be able to understand the Dhamma in all of its facets. This then is one who can fulfill all of the Lord Buddha's stipulations concerning the offering of the Katina. So, the assembly of bhikkhus must come to a unanimous decision as to which of them is best suited to receive the Katina cloth.
This Katina cloth and all of these offerings have been considered suitable for Weerdhamma Bhikkhu. He is a bhikkhu of mindfulness and wisdom and can perform the Katina ceremony correctly according to the way established by the Lord Buddha. If any bhikkhu here disagrees, he should raise his objections now in the midst of this assembly. If all of the bhikkhus agree, then they should express their agreement by saying sadhu in unison.
Sadhu.
Now I understand there are other offerings, so this would be the time to make other robe offerings. So those people have been appointed to help with these offerings to our honorable guests. Please come forward.
So we can, on the count of 1, 2, 3.
This is Thai style. If you're ready, on the count of 1, 2, 3. 1, 2.
And before we chant the Anumottana and the sharing of blessings, Ambassador Fison has a few words.
Namaskar. ท่านอาจารย์วีระสมโมท่านอาจารย์ประสันโน Venerable สังกัด is and it's a great privilege and honor because this katin is being offered in this land of free and fair-minded people who have embraced Buddhism with their open attitude and warm heart, the way they have embraced asylum seekers, refugees, migrants and visitors. So I think for anyone visiting Canada, it touches their heart and they can feel that during that stay. A year ago, my wife and I spent our first Sunday in this very room, the first Sunday in Canada. We could not have spent a better Sunday. And I remember very well, Malaga was in my place, being the main sponsor. And Tina gave me a very warm smile and welcome. And Anoma, who has been with us throughout this year, when she mentioned to me if I would like to be a sponsor for this katin, I couldn't believe my ears. I was thrilled, I was excited, and it's just a good fortune that has fallen from somewhere on our family, on the embassy. I was a bit frightened that I would not do as well as Malaka. But Malaka and Anoma gave me a very convincing and warm comfort that will be with you throughout. And indeed, throughout all these months, my colleagues and I have been well advised on every single state. They, together with others, lay community, have given us more than moral support, guidance, even a written guidance to show us exactly what we need to go and fulfill. So I want to express my deep gratitude to both of them and to their families and loved ones. I also like to use this opportunity to express my appreciation to all volunteers who have cooked and delivered food to look after the Sangha during the Vatsa for the duration of 3 months, and all the volunteers who have worked behind the scenes decorating this hall to be as beautiful as the hall can be. yesterday and today and surely the end of this ceremony. And I'd like to thank each one of you who have prepared your meal for today that we share and for coming all the way. I know that some have driven all the way from Montreal, and I'm sure that there will be others who have traveled further than that, at least the two venerable Ajahn Pasanno and Ajahn Suyanto. Ajahn Pasanno happened to go through a more challenge through the winds and the gales and the and nature around the international airport in Chicago. he brought additional boon to my colleague in Chicago that who had offered him a room at his place to spend the night. So he doesn't have to camp outside the airport. I also like to make a small announcement because ever since I had this a privilege of hosting and sponsoring, I said to myself that I liked to have this ceremony being shared by as many people as possible, being shared by as different kind of people from all walks of life as possible. So we set up a bank account immediately, right in February, after we knew that this was going to happen. We set up a bank account, one in Bangkok, and the other one here in Ottawa. The one in Bangkok, we have received generous donations from people from all walks of life. First of all, from my colleagues around the world, different embassies. One ambassador happened even to be a princess. She participated in this generous donations. We have donations from millionaires, businessmen, to farmers, workers, Thai temporary workers in the Winnipeg, in Hamilton, all the delegation coming through my residence make donations, doctors, leading the medical experts, and the largest generous donations was to the amount of from one individual, more than $3,000 Canadian. Mm-hmm. And that is a relative of Pipram. Pipram conveyed this message, and her relative in Thailand. And so I want to recognize the contribution. The Canadians walking to our embassy consular section, collecting their passport, seeing donation box, put in their coins and rupees. So the amount that we already transmitted to the Saranath Bank Friday was $21,568. Not bad. And here, I also have a check from Canada and some from Thailand to the amount of $21,276. So all in all, we have $42,844. Well, I said to myself that I'm utterly confident with 48,000, Eddie and Mark will find it so comfortable to complete the project of the meditation hall with all the furniture. And if you had any questions asked, I give it to Ajahn. Why the 48,000 isn't enough for additional furniture? And on top of that, through the suggestion of my colleague, Narong, even before I came, we received $17,000 from the Thai government to sponsor the Saranath Monastery. So the temple was looking for a second-hand tractor. So this 17,000 probably will give almost a good second-hand tractor. I think that Tina will have to find money on top of that. But just by coincidence, that the government happened to be able to grant this 17,000 right at the time when the monastery is looking for a second-hand tractor. So again, this doesn't happen every year. I hope very much that all of you will be inspired by the Thai government. I think that the donation box is over there. if we can get another 22,000 in the box, I think Mark and Eddie would not have any complaint about this. On the personal note, my family, my wife, my daughter, I think we have been blessed by the fact that I'm posted here. I thought coming from India to Canada is going to be so far away from Buddhism when I was at the heart of Buddhism. And I thought this far north will be the furthest you can run away from Buddhism. And then we landed 107 kilometers from Tisaranath. And that distance, that good distance, had enabled us to seek peace, tranquility, wisdom from the Sangha, led by the Ajahn Viratamo, as well as at the Sati Saraniya Hermitage by the Bhikkhuni Aya Methanati. If my Sanskrit is still working, Metta is kindness, Nati is river. So her name is the mighty of kindness in the river, the size of the river. If my Sanskrit is lousy, don't tell anyone. In any case, we have attended, not we, my wife and my daughter, had the good fortune to not only stay at both places, but participated in the retreat and in the meditation practice, in listening to the Dharma thoughts. This has been a good fortune for our family. And I don't think we can thank enough of Ajahn Viratamo for setting up this monastery, for bringing the best Thailand can offer to Canada in the teaching of the Lord Buddha. So I would not be able to forget the single individual who had been working non-stop, and that is Kunun Suranchana, who had been I'm just a figurehead, but she does all the work. And in a normal Thai tradition, I get all the credit. I think that this is an occasion where we can be very proud and humble to bow to the Sangha, the blessed ones, disciples, who are worthy of the offering, who are worthy of the hospitalities, of the respect. And I'm sure that all of you would agree that this community, Canadian, Sri Lankan, Myanmar, Thai, Laos, Indian, and the like, have been well united by the teaching and by the path. Although we are not anywhere near the deathless gate, but through the existence of monasteries in these areas, at least we know where exactly the direction is heading to. So thank you very much for this opportunity, and we are all very grateful to the Sangha.
The Sangha would like to offer the formal anamotana, the word anamotana means to delight in the goodness that has been done, and that is exactly what we all feel and wish to express, seeing all the various people coming, Ambassador Pisan, family, but all of the whole community coming together, just to be able to delight and acknowledge the generosity and goodness that is the characteristic of this day today. So we'll offer the formal anamotana. If people would like to do the dedication of merit, of water pouring ceremony, this is the time to do it. For those who don't have the sort of the accoutrements to establish in one's heart the recognition of the goodness that's done, and wishing to dedicate the blessings that come to that from that for others.
There's some people who have not presented. Can I ask?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. I'm sorry. There are people who have brought things with them. They have not presented to the monk. Can I, if you would forgive me, ask them to present it now. I forgot to mention Ajahn Suvijano in my appreciation remarks, because the items that have been presented today have been well advised by Long Na. And we were so delighted that we have been able to find the requisites that will be useful for the Sangha. So if I may ask people who have brought their requisites to present to the Sangha.
Okay, looks like we're all ready. Offerings have all been made.
Yep. Avarivaha pula paripolendi sakarang eva me veto tinang petanang upakapati echetang natitang tumhan kitam eva samichato sapeporendu sangapa tandho panara soyan thamani chotira soyatha
nabitiyo vivachantu Sāparo govina sato māte bhavatvantarāyo sukhi dikāyuko bhava abhivādana sirsani changutāpacāyino jātāro dhamma vadante āyuvāno sukhāṁ Balang kale datande sapanyo adanyo itamachara kale nadina nariyesu hoju putesu tatisu vipasa namanatasa vipola hondi dakina ye tata hanumodante vaya vachankaranti va Na te na dakina ho na te piponya sabakino tasmatande apati wana jito yata dinang mahapalang ponyani paralo kasaming batida honti pani nande pavadu sapa mangalang rakantu sapa devata Sama Buddha Nubhavena Sada Soti Bhavantite Bhavatu Sapa Mangalang Rakantu Sapa Devata Sama Dhamma Nubhavena Sada Soti Bhavantite Bhavatu Sapa Mangalang Rakantu Sapa Devata Sapa Sangha Nubhavena Sada Sodhi Pavantite.
Tachaloka di peti saham peti saham jari mahi varam haya chata sandita sata brahma.
Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Buddhang dhammang sanghang namassami.
I'd just like to, before beginning the Dhamma talk, express my appreciation for all of the help that everybody's given to make this ceremony come about. Ambassador Pisan and his family, kind of the centerpiece. And it's sort of like Ambassador Pisan saying, where they gets to get all the credit, and they, but many people do it. It's sort of like being an abbot, where you're an abbot, and sort of, everybody does all sorts of things around you, and then people say, oh, it's a wonderful ceremony. Wasn't it great? And I said, yeah, I guess so. But it so that as a and the reality is, of course, is that many, many people come together, help out, pitch in, and that and of course that's the whole purpose of the Katina. This is why the Buddha established it. And this is the function of benefit of ceremony and ritual. It's nice to have a coherent philosophy. It's nice to have meditation techniques that make the mind peaceful. When you bring people together, it actually relies on ceremony, ritual, something that pulls people together. And so that within any religious tradition, but certainly in Buddhism, then the purpose of having a katina is to create that bond between the lay community and the monastic community, as Ajahn Viradhamma was explaining, and we rely, as monastics, we rely on the generosity of the lay community, and then a monastery becomes a place that can be of support for the lay community in for spiritual and emotional well-being, and that is it's important as a human being to have those resources, that sense of having a community, and of course our community is defined by many things. Our community can be family, it can be work, it can be religion, it can be all sorts of things, sports, and we have different circles of community, but the community of say a Buddhist community is going to be a community that is going to be emphasizing and modeling the foundations of virtue, integrity, generosity, kindness, peacefulness, discernment, wisdom, and to be able to model and to engage in those qualities. And that's to create a sense of community with ourselves, with each other, with those values as a foundation. It's really, it's very special. And to me it was, when I very first went to live in Thailand, I, as along with many, many others, the main interest was meditation. How to meditate, how to learn to train the mind, and recognizing sort of, it doesn't take much to recognize that your mind is completely out of control most of the time. And so that, okay, what do I do about this? And then finding that, of course, that Buddhism gives many tools for allowing us to establish a sense of clarity and understanding of our minds, of our hearts. But that's a very, say, a very personal endeavor. And when I was in Thailand and showing interest in Buddhism, even when I ordained as a monk at first, that was my main interest. And it wasn't until I saw Ajahn Chah, my teacher, and his monastery, that I realized and understood that, well, actually Buddhism is about community. And that was something that was really touching, and in that sense because Ajahn Chah was able to create community of monks, of nuns, of lay people, and lay people from all different areas of the country, say levels and strata of society. You have your local villagers, the merchants from the nearby town, the civil servants, people from the cities. Everybody came and everybody had a place. That was very moving for me, thinking that this training and the function of a monastery is able to provide kind of a glue for community. So here we are in Ottawa building community, and it's something that I delight in the sense that this is my very first, I mean, I've been a monk for over 40 years now, and this is my very first Katina ceremony in Canada, and I grew up in Canada. So to see a Katina ceremony taking place in Canada, it really warms the heart. And of course, I didn't grow up near Ottawa. It was funny. And Suvichano was he's the Thai monk, asking me this morning, "You're Canadian. Did you grow up nearby here?" And I said, "Well, no, not really." And I said, so I looked up on Google Maps. As 3,174 kilometers to where I grew up. I grew up in Nepal, Manitoba. So it's a long way away. But the sense of seeing and being able to participate in a Katina ceremony here in Canada. It's very special, especially for myself, as I have my roots being in Canada. When we come together as a say for a, say a offering ceremony. It's if you ask a, say, an ethnic Buddhist, Thai or Sri Lankan or Khmer or Lao, Burmese, and I'm speaking from my experience in Thailand, and I imagine it's similar for the other ethnic groups, in that if you ask people, oh, what's the point of a katina? And people will, certainly in Thai, they'd say, oh, it's food. It's really meritorious. And of course, for most Westerners, sort of like, if you sell merit, what's that? Sort of like, you know, when you're a Boy Scout or a Girl Scout and you get those merit badges. it doesn't really work like that, in the sense of because it's one of the Buddhist terminologies that really don't translate into the English language. The word from the Pali language is punya. In Thai, they call it bun, and I'm sure in the other languages that it's translated in a similar way. And I know that living in America, and even before then, Thais who were living overseas, and then how do you translate bun into English? I said, wow, it's really hard. Because punya is like the result of wholesome actions. And the Buddha himself said that to not underestimate punya. Punya is another word for happiness. And you think in that terms, the roots of our happiness are in the results of our skillful and wholesome action. So that's why punya is not just sort of offering material things, but it's you have many different bases of punya, so that taking the refuges is punya. In that sense of taking a refuge in Buddha Dhamma Sangha is punya. Because one is taking something that is other than our own greed, hatred, and delusion as refuge, which is what we usually do. I don't know about anybody else, but that's, the habit of the mind. And when we think of what our mind relies on, it usually doesn't rely on wisdom, compassion, purity. It relies on our habits, conditioning. How do we get what we want? How do I get rid of what I don't like? So that we're pushed and pulled around by our likes and our dislikes, our greed, hatred, and delusion. But when we actually take refuge in the Buddha Dhamma Sangha, is taking refuge in the qualities of wisdom, of compassion, of purity. And that, if that's done consciously, then there's the heart is able to really rise up with a sense of well-being and clarity. And that's happiness. And happiness isn't necessarily just getting what you want, but happiness is the feeling of well-being that you don't have to have remorse or regret for. And that's and so that when the Buddha is also, say, when the Buddha is asked, what's the benefit of virtue, of moral precepts? And the Buddha immediately says, the benefit of keeping moral precepts and virtue is non-remorse. Just not having to regret having done something that's unskillful. And I'm sure we've all looked and said, oh God, I wish I hadn't said that. Oh jeez, if only I hadn't done that. That was just really, that was really dumb. So just not having to go through that all the contortions of remorse and regret that comes from just impulsive or unrestrained actions and speech. So that has a brightening of the heart comes from that, and that is that's something that is something to be cherished and looked at. How do we do that more often, rather than it just being a kind of an accidental event in our life? Something is actually conscious and clear, and we've got a real broad perspective. Okay, how do I do this? And that's where say where the Buddha's teachings are really giving us the skills of how to live a human life well, because we don't get we don't get a handbook for this, we don't get the directions, we have to learn as we go, and it's also as Gajahn Cha, remember him saying that this in a similar sort of vein of the say the human body, human life, having no, it's impossible to have a realistic expectation of how long you're going to live, how healthy you're going to be, what you can do, how what kind of things will be befall one in this lifetime. And he said that it's like this this model or this brand, you don't get any warranties with it, you don't get any guarantees with it. So that as a in this human life we come in, it's not a sure thing. And that sense of, and this is how Ajahn Chah, when he would give a speak about the characteristics of existence, the three universal characteristics of existence, anicca, dukkha, anatta, usually translated impermanence, suffering, non-self. But when Ajahn Chah would translate anicca, he would always say, it's not sure. Rather than impermanent, sort of not a sure thing, uncertain. And that's a really interesting reflection in itself, in the sense of when we say, because most of us can understand impermanence, change. But what it tends to do is it tends to objectify. You put it out there. That over there is changing. That over there is impermanent. But when we say sort of unsure, uncertain, it's actually how we feel it. It's not objective, it's subjectified. It's how we feel it, how we experience it. And that's important to pay attention, because the nature of the Buddha's teachings, like when we do chanting the characteristics of the Dhamma, of the teachings, one of the qualities that the Buddha says is open ankle, which means leading inwards. And this is what we have to keep doing. We have to keep bringing this reflection, the teachings, the truths. We have to keep leading it inwards so that we experience it here. And that's what is really important in this Buddhist teachings. It's not that you have an objective reality outside that you kind of figure out, but it's paying attention to how you feel, how you experience it. And that's one of the things that Ajahn Chah would be asked over and over and over, would be, how is it possible that you can teach all these Westerners who show up and train with you and study with you, because you don't speak English and they don't speak Thai, how is it possible to teach them? And Ajahn Chah, say, he gave a very lovely image, and saying it was like taking, he would usually be drinking some hot water, hot tea or something, some warm tea, and be sitting beside him all the time. He says, it's like this warm water. And he said, so in the Thai language, you say one thing, Nanglon, but in Ubon, you don't say that. You say, Nanglon. So it's like, and in Chinese, it'd be something else. In Indian, it'd be something else. In French, it'd be something else. In English, in Indian, it'd be all these different languages. So it's never the same. So the reality of just something simple like hot water is impossible to convey with language. The Dhamma is the same. You can't convey it with language. He said, but all you have to do is stick your finger in it. And then you'll know what hot water is. And then you know what warm water is. And he said, because the language of Dhamma is not, it's a language of experience. And so that recognizing that our experience is what we have to pay attention to. And of course, what the Buddha is always pointing to is in terms of experience, what is actually most important to us? Suffering, not suffering. And so that if one begins the day and one starts with the sense of, how can I spend this day creating more suffering for myself and others, make myself more and more miserable, then Buddhism really isn't that good for you. But as I would think that most people don't actually consider that. Most people consider, how can I increase my well-being and my happiness and decrease my suffering? And that's the bottom line, really, for us as human beings. And this is what the Buddha addresses. The Buddha addresses this simple reality. And, of course, finding the ways that facilitate our ability to experience well-being and happiness. Of course, that's where punya comes in that sense of merit. Punya is how to live our lives in a way that supports that ongoing experience of well-being. So that just acts of generosity, that quality of and it's interesting that there's a couple different words that the Buddha uses for generosity or for giving. One is dana, which is giving, and dana is both a material dana, say the offering of the robes and the requisites, let's say material dana, the offering of monetary donations, it's a sort of material dana. But then there's also the aspects of just of service, knowing how to help each other out. That's an aspect of dana, where one is, it's not material, but it's a giving of service and that takes a sense of generosity. How can I help? How can I be of service? Also, they say that a generosity that is a part of that sort of non-material generosity is just this thing. When we say anumodana, of that delighting in the goodness of others, because it's not material, but it's a giving, it's a dana, it's a punya, because we so often, just seeing somebody else, it's easy to end up comparing ourselves to others. Did I do as good as them? Am I better? Am I worse? How do I line myself up? And that just complicates the mind. But when one can see the goodness of others and enter delight in, there's a But if one's say feeling of well-being is dependent only on oneself, if one's able to pay attention to the goodness of others as a vehicle for well-being, then one's, say, the percentages of feeling good actually increase by, say, how, just in this room, there's only a couple hundred people, so I mean, we've already sort of increased by 200-fold the opportunity to experience well-being. Just do the math. Statistically, it's a better deal. It's a better bet. So it's just this paying attention to these natural laws, and that's what the Buddha points to. Another aspect of dana is also of what's in abhaya dana. And abhaya is there are aspects of one is like a giving of forgiveness, so that ability to forgive and not to carry a grudge, not to carry aversion or ill will, is a giving that is, and the Buddha says it's more meritorious than material giving, because that sense of being able to offer forgiveness, not to carry that sense of a grudge or having a vengeful intention in the mind that one holds on to, that opens up the heart, softens it, which allows happiness to come. Another aspect of abhaya dana is also a giving of safety and security. The word abhaya literally means safety or security, and this is where the Buddha said that he speaks of the five great gifts, the things that one can give, the five greatest things that one can give, and he said, what are the five great gifts? Not to kill, not to steal, not to engage in sexual misconduct, not to lie, use false speech, not to indulge in intoxication. The five precepts. Right. You don't sort of think of it. You don't usually think of precepts in terms of a basis of giving and generosity. Because I think one that we tend to relate to precepts and morality from a Judeo-Christian background or a theistic background, where there are commandments, but what the Buddha is pointing to are these are choices that we make that have different effects. And when we make a choice to restrain from taking the life of any living creature, we're giving security, we're giving freedom from fear, we're giving freedom from oppression to many beings. And it's a very beautiful way of looking at it. When we are able to establish ourselves in those precepts and recollect them in a way that you see that we're fulfilling an aspect of generosity and giving and punya, merit, and you feel, well, this is a cause for happiness to establish in the heart. It's a it's engaging in a way with the world that is creating that sense of that freedom from mistrust. The freedom from fear, freedom from mistrust, because that's one of the things I'd say in terms of human interactions. One of the things that's very uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. Who do you trust? Who do you feel safe with? Who do you feel comfortable with? But when you live with those people who you feel that they're really trustworthy, they've got integrity. And I said, I'd like to be like that too. Yeah. And that's a moving into something that's really skillful and a source of real happiness. But that sense of well-being that comes from this level of integrity. And it isn't something that is so distant, so far away from anybody to live or to achieve or to integrate into their life. So these aspects of, say, of dana, of sila, are what the Buddha, these are the basis of punya. And the last one that Buddha points to as a basis of punya is bhavana, is cultivation, meditation, mental development. When we're able to take an interest in the cultivation of the heart. And bhavana, as a word, is oftentimes used as a word that encompasses meditation and training in different ways, training in mindfulness, training in awareness, training in reflection, investigation, using our understanding of the Buddha's teachings to consider and contemplate how to apply them. All of that is kind of in the realm of bhavana. Because the word bhavana, literally what it means is to bring into being. So to bring into being clarity, bringing into being understanding, bringing into being a steadiness of heart. And of course those are the qualities that allow the heart to be very steady and unshakable, which is if you think of the things that we would like to have within our repertoire of emotional responses to the world around us. Yeah, a sense of steadiness and unshakability. That's really, to me, that's really, really important. And it was one of the, first going to train with Ajahn Chah, seeing this teacher in a mayu of many different people coming to him with either demands, requests, hopes, projections, and him not being shaken by it, but just being and just out of compassion and kindness responding to the people in the situations. That was an incredibly inspiring to see that one thing we can put a lot of projections onto it, say as Buddhists, think of the Buddha and think of all the wholesome and pure qualities of the Buddha, but the Buddha was 2,500 years ago those are maybe our expectations or projections or hopes or whatever. But to actually see a human being living in this day and age who embodies those qualities and say, oh, this is possible. This is the fruit of living this teaching. So this And the teaching can still is still relevant and realizable in this present day. Because it's easy to sort of say, well, Buddha lived 2,500 years ago, it might have been possible 2,500 years ago, but modern society, we have to sort of adjust our expectations for modern times, and which usually means we have excuses for ourselves and don't do very much. But when we say, oh, this is realizable in this lifetime, this is applicable for these, whatever situation one's in, this is applicable. And that sense of unshakability is possible. And so that, and not just unshakable in a kind of a neutral, numbed out neutrality, but a unshakability with a kind of a clarity, well-being, happiness, punya. The benefits of punya come to fruition in a sense of well-being and happiness. Say doing good things doesn't make you miserable. it has the opposite effect. So that sense of punya being something to be attended to, and that it is also it's not limited to material offerings. What it is say the basis of creating the conditions in the heart for well-being, for clarity, for wisdom. So that's a sense of and that sense of well-being and happiness is such an important base for the developing of a steadiness of mind. That's this is in many of the discourses the Buddha gives. He gives a kind of a sequence of causes and conditions that come through, and some of it arising. Sometimes it's through reflection. Sometimes it's through skillful action. Sometimes it's through faith. But then it goes into these different sequences of with that condition, there's arising of well-being. With that well-being, there's arising of joy, with the rising of joy, the rising of tranquility, with the rising of tranquility as a condition, there's the rising of happiness. And then, so with the arising of happiness, there's the arising of samadhi, of meditative stability, samadhi, concentration usually. And oftentimes we look, and sometimes when the Buddha gives that to you, he'll actually stop there and he'll emphasize it and say, the happy mind is easily concentrated. And usually that's in the direct opposite of how we tend to approach it, in the sense of, you know, when I get my meditation together, then I'm going to be happy. When I finally get some concentration, then I'm going to be happy. And when I can make my mind still, then I'm going to be happy. And we overlook what the Buddha himself said, get your happiness together, and your meditation will fall into place. That's really, and when you hear that, oh, right, and it's sort of like the Homer Simpson, duh. It's all right. That's the way the human heart actually works. So that to pay attention to those very human and ordinary aspects, but it's because the Buddha really understood the human condition that he was able to give us the lay out the training for us, lay out the teaching, and pass it on so that it's still available to us 2,500 years on down the line. And it's something that continues to be to be passed on, and as is evidenced by, say, this gathering here. We're a long way from India 2,500 years ago. This is Canada in 2014, and people still are drawn to that, to the applicability of these teachings, and the benefit that the teachings can bring. So that to pay attention to the big picture of the Buddhist teachings, and the big picture of one, what the tools that the Buddha gives us, and the goal that he points out to us. So that having these different means of creating well-being and happiness, but there's a possibility of this understanding and peace that leads to unshakability. It's possible. It's like when very beginning of September, I went and visited a Buddhist teacher, one of the kind of pioneers of Buddhism, bringing Buddhism to America, North America, to the West. Ruth Dennison, she's a teacher who trained in the 1960s, early 1960s, in Burma, and was encouraged to teach, and she's done that, and she's getting well into her 90s now. Health is kind of failing. And so I went to visit and do some chanting for her and to spend a bit of time, because I've known her for many years. And remember, Ruth was saying, "Don't settle for just happiness." She would just emphasize that, "Don't settle for just happiness." And it's like, yes, the teachings will make you happy, life can make you happy. Don't settle for just happiness. There's a lot. There's this opportunity to use that happiness as a vehicle for real peace and real unshakability in your life. So I'll offer that for reflection today.
Kandvayang havadakata satukarang tatamase satu satu Sātu ānamodāmi.
Ānamodāmi. Thank you. So this ends the ceremony. It's our custom usually to pay respects at the shrine to the Buddha Dhamma Sangha, so we could do that as a group and then pay our respects to Lompo Pasano. Before I do that, if anyone has time to help with the cleanup, and if anyone has a vehicle that could help to bring stuff back to the monastery, much appreciated. There's much to do. So let's turn to the shrine and pay our respects in our traditional way.
Arahaṃ sammā sambuddho bhagavā Buddhaṃ bhagavantaṃ abhivādemi Svākato bhagavata dhammo dhammaṃ namassāmi
Supatipanno
bhagavato sāvaka saṅgho Sangham Namami.
Thank you. See you next time.